Astrid asked, yawning and rubbing sleep from her eyes.
I know a little about coyotes now, Lana said. If we see this many, it means there's at least twice as many around here. Some have to be out hunting. Coyotes hunt day and night.
She sat back down and picked up her sewing.
They're waiting for something. What? I didn't see Pack Leader. Maybe he left. Maybe they're waiting for him to come back.
Sooner or later they'll lose interest, won't they?
Astrid asked. Lana shook her head.
Normal coyotes, sure. But these aren't normal coyotes.
They waited, and every hour or so, Sam or Adelio would check the view, and every time they saw coyotes. Suddenly, there came the sound of 100 canine voices raised in excited yips. Patrick stood up, bristling. Sam ran to the peephole. Lana shone the flashlight on him. They have fire, Sam said. Lana pushed past him and climbed up to see for herself.
It's Pack Leader, she confirmed. He has a burning branch.
It's not just a burning branch, it's a torch, Sam said. It's not just something he found. It's only burning at one end. A branch wouldn't do that. Someone with hands had to have made it. Someone gave it to him.
The darkness,
Lana whispered. This cabin will burn like a match, Sam said.
No, I don't want to burn,
Lana cried.
We have to get out, make some kind of a deal with Pack Leader.
You said he'd kill us,
Astrid said. She had her hands over little Pete's ears.
They want me alive. They want me to teach them human ways. That's what the darkness said. He can't kill me. He needs me.
Try, Sam said.
Pack Leader!
Lana shouted.
Pack Leader!
He doesn't hear you.
He's a coyote. He can hear a mouse in its hole from 50 feet away,
Lana snapped, raising her voice to a scream then.
Pack Leader! Pack Leader! I'll do whatever you want!
Sam was back at the spy hole.
He's right outside, he whispered.
Pack Leader, don't!
Lana begged.
They're all backing away.
Oh, God!
Smoke!
Adelio said, and pointed a flashlight beam at the door's threshold. Lana hefted a gold brick and began beating at the boards they had nailed over the door. Adelio grabbed her arms.
You want to burn alive?
Lana demanded. Adelio released her.
We're coming out!
Lana shouted as she banged at the boards.
We're coming out!
But the boards were no easier to remove than they had been to put up. A yellow tongue licked beneath the door. Sam pulled back suddenly from the spy hole.
Fire!
I don't want to burn!
Lana wailed.
It's the smoke that kills you,
Sam whispered, looking at Astrid. There's got to be a way out. Astrid said,
You know the way out.
From the back wall now, smoke snuck in through cracks and seams. Lana hammered at the boards. Smoke was gathering under the rafters. The cabin was burning quickly. Already the heat was becoming intolerable.
Help me!
Lana cried.
We have to get out!
Adelio sprang into action, helping to pull boards away. Sam leaned over little Pete's head and kissed Astrid on the mouth.
Don't let me turn into Cain, he said. I'll keep an eye on you,
she said. Okay. Everyone get back from the door, Sam said, but too quietly for it to register above the panic sounds. He grabbed Lana's hand as she swung with a gold brick.
What are you doing?
She cried.
You saved my life with your power, Sam said. My turn.
Lana and Adelio and Quinn shrank back from the doorway. Sam closed his eyes. It was easy to find the anger. He was angry at so many things. But for some reason, when he tried to focus on the outrage of this attack, his mind's eye did not call up pictures of the coyote leader, or even of Cain. The picture in his mind was of his own mother. Stupid. Wrong. Unfair of him. Even cruel. But still, when he reached for his anger, it was his mother he saw. "It wasn't my fault," he whispered to that image. He raised his hands, fingers splayed wide. But at that moment, the half-burned door burst open. Flames and smoke were everywhere, a torrent of choking smoke. And through the inferno leapt a coyote as big as a Great Dane. That, Sam thought, made it easier. A flash of green-white light erupted from his upraised hands, and the coyote dropped to the floor. An 8-inch hole was burned clear through his body. A second flash, like 1,000 flash bulbs, and the front of the cabin blew apart. The sudden vacuum swallowed some of the flame, not all. Just a pause in the inferno, and Sam was moving, dragging Astrid by the arm, Astrid dragging little Pete in turn. The others shook off their shock and followed. They advanced through the hole in the cabin, and the coyotes surged forward, a mass of dangerous teeth beneath cold, focused eyes. Sam let go of Astrid, raised his hands, and the light exploded again. A dozen coyotes caught fire and fell or writhed or ran screeching into the night like mad sparklers in the retreating gloom.
"Pack leader,"
Lana warned in a voice reduced to a croak by the smoke that swirled around them. She was leaning on Adelio's arm, the two of them safely out of the cabin, but far from safe on the lawn. The cabin fell with a crash behind them and burned like a bonfire. The orange light revealed 100 staring, uncomprehending canine faces. Their eyes and teeth shone. Pack leader stood out from his pack, facing Sam, bristling, fearless. Pack leader barked a command, and the entire pack moved as one, a wave of snarling fury. Sam held his hands high, and beams of purest green-white light fired. The first wave of coyotes caught fire instantly. They turned in terror and raced back through their brothers and sisters, setting off complete panic. The pack turned tail and ran into the night. And pack leader was no longer fearless, no longer leading, but following, racing to keep up with his beaten army. Some burned as they ran and set alight dry shrubbery. Sam lowered his hands to his sides. Astrid was beside him. "Dude," Quinn said in an awestruck voice. "I don't think they'll come back," Sam said.
"Where to now, man?" Adelio asked him.
Sam stood gazing out at empty desert, so dark still that it swallowed all the light of the burning cabin. He wanted to cry. He hadn't known he had that much anger inside. It made him sick. His mother had done her best. She wasn't to blame. He wanted to throw up. Astrid saw that Sam was in no condition to talk, so she said,
"We'll head back to Perdido Beach. We'll go back, and we'll make things right."
"And Cain will just step aside," Quinn said. "No problem, la-di-da."
Astrid flared.
"I'm not saying it will be easy. It will be a test for us."
Adelio shook his head.
"Isn't going to be a test. It's going to be a war."
"Sun will be up soon. We'll be able to see something," Drake said.
"See what?"
Panda whined.
There's nothing but desert out there.
Kane says he's probably staying close to the barrier to find his way back.
Panda sounded nervous when he said,
Kane thinks Sam is coming back?
Panda was still sulking about his sprained ankle and almost useless, so Drake had grabbed two other Coates kids. The first was a fat Chinese-American kid called Chunk. Chunk was a low-level bully, not someone Drake would normally have hung out with. Plus, he would not shut up, but chattered away, mostly bragging about what bands he'd seen in concert and what movie stars he'd met. Chunk's father was a talent agent in Hollywood. If there still was a Hollywood. The other kid was a girl, skinny little black girl named Louise, one of the drivers. With Panda semi-useless, Drake needed a driver. After the Andrew poof, Kane and Diana, along with the creepy little nerd, Jack, had gone to deal with Frederico and try to get things back under control at Coates. Kane had sent Drake off with orders to see if he could find Sam. Drake didn't like having to follow this order. He was sleepy, and, as he pointed out to Kane, there was a lot of emptiness out there, let alone at night. So how was he supposed to find Sam, even if he was still following the barrier?
There's a road goes up Piggyback Mountain, Kane said. Remember? The field trip? You can see for miles.
So, despite it still being dark, and despite the fact that Louise was a much crazier driver than cautious Panda, and despite Panda's whining and Chunk's babble, they had driven up Piggyback Mountain, and after a time found the lookout. They had been there for a while, listening to coyote howls from down in the valley, Drake threatening to punch Chunk if he didn't shut up about how he had met Christina Aguilera one time. Drake was steaming, unhappy to be up here in the middle of nowhere with no food or sodas or anything. Just a bottle of water and these idiots.
So what happened with Andrew?
Louise asked during one of Chunk's rare silences.
He ditched, man. He cut a hole, Panda said.
I still got more than a year. I'm only 13,
Louise said, like anyone cared.
Someone will come rescue us in a year, right?
Sooner would be better, Drake drawled. What with me having a month?
I got killed June, Chunk said. You know what that makes me? I'm a cancer.
Got that right,
Drake muttered.
Sign of the crab, Chunk added.
I have to go, Drake said.
He climbed down out of the SUV they were in and walked to the edge of the lookout, up to the railing. He started peeing over the side, and that's when he saw it. It looked like a match being carried through the night. Impossible to tell distances.
Chunk! Get the binoculars!
Chunk came hustling up a few seconds later. Drake had watched as the tiny, flickering light went racing in zigzags far below. Chunk said,
This is like being up in the Hollywood Hills, you know? Up on Mulholland Drive, which is where all these famous actors and stuff live. One time I went to this guy's house. He was like a director that my dad reps, right? And...
Drake yanked the binoculars from Chunk's hands and tried to capture the spark in his field of vision. Almost impossible. He would catch it and then lose it. Even when he managed to follow it for a few seconds, he couldn't make anything out. It was just an orange flame wandering through a featureless void. But it was almost surely moving too fast to be carried by a person, even a fast person. Then, the spark stopped moving. And gradually, Drake realized the flame was growing. He peered intently and thought he could make out some kind of structure, like a house or something, in the spreading glow. Panda had limped over to join them. Drake handed him the binoculars.
What do you think that is?
Panda peered through the binoculars, and at that moment there was a flash of light, and he tore the binoculars away and yelled. The second flash was even clearer, and now there were sparklers making light trails through the darkness of early morning. Panda looked again.
There's some kind of house, and a tower or something, and there's like dogs or something.
A third blinding light, and now even more of the number of crazily weaving sparklers.
I don't know, man,
Panda said.
I think maybe we just found what we were looking for,
Drake said. Chunk, scared, said,
You think that's this kid you're trying to catch? Dude's got the power, man, like in that movie.
Drake yanked the gun from his belt and said,
No, Chunk, this is the power, and I've got it.
That shut Chunk up for a few seconds.
The fire's spreading, Louise pointed out. It's probably all dry down there, and bushes and stuff catching fire.
Drake had noticed the same thing. He glanced back in the direction they'd come from, tried to make sense of the topography.
Coates is back that way. The barrier is over that way.
He pointed.
There's no wind, so the fire is going to climb the hill, which means they'll be coming this way, toward Coates. They'll pass down below us.
What are you gonna do? Shoot them when they walk past?
Chunk asked, eager and afraid.
Yeah, that's right. 3,000 feet down this hill, and I'm gonna shoot them with a handgun,
Drake said sarcastically.
Moron.
So what do we do?
Panda asked.
No wonder Kane's scared of this guy. Dude can do all that. That's a 4-bar right there, I bet,
Chunk opined.
I seen all kinds of stuff at Coates with Benno and Andrew and Frederico. None of them could do that kind of stuff. You think he can take Kane down?
Drake spun and smacked Chunk in the mouth with the back of his free hand. When Chunk staggered back, Drake moved in and kicked him in the groin. Chunk grabbed himself and fell to his knees. He whimpered,
Why'd you do that, man?
Because I'm sick of listening to you, Drake snapped. I'm sick of all this powers crap. You saw what we did to freaks at Coates? Who do you think it was that took care of that? All these kids with their stupid so-called powers, starting fires and moving stuff around and reading your mind and all? Who do you think it was grabbed them one by one in their sleep and beat them down, and when they woke up their hands were setting up in a block of cement?
It was you, Drake,
Panda said, placating him.
You got them all.
That's right. And I didn't even have a gun then. It's not about who's got powers, morons. It's about who's not afraid. And who's gonna do what has to be done.
Chunk was climbing to his feet now, with a hand from Panda.
It's not Sam Temple or even Kane you little worms need to worry about. It's me,
Drake said.
Mr. Laserhands down there isn't gonna make it to where he can fight Kane. I'm gonna take him down long before that.
34. 87 hours, 46 minutes. They were six now. Sam, Adelio, Quinn, Lana, Astrid, and Little Pete. All plans for following the phase wall home were abandoned for now. The fire, a patchwork of brilliant yellow and orange, was climbing the hills to the north, cutting them off. They could only keep moving south. Dawn came at last, an unsatisfying gray that bleached the color from everything, even the fire. They could see where they were placing their feet now, but that didn't stop them from tripping and stumbling. They were lead-footed from exhaustion. Little Pete silently collapsed and was left behind until Astrid noticed.
After that, Adelio and Sam took turns carrying him on their backs, which made their progress even slower and more treacherous. Little Pete slept that way for a while, maybe 2 hours. Then, when the boys couldn't manage another step, he woke up and set off on his own, and now they were all following him, too tired to argue or try to redirect him, since he was going mostly in the right direction.
"We gotta stop, man," Adelio said. "The girls are tired."
"I'm fine,"
Lana said.
"I've been running with coyotes. Walking with you guys is like standing still."
"I've had it," Sam agreed, and stopped right where he was, which happened to be beside something that was either a very big bush or a small tree.
"Petey!" Astrid shouted. "Come back! We're stopping!"
Little Pete had stopped walking, but he would not come back. Astrid wearily trudged to him, every sore footstep communicating the pain she was in.
"Sam!" Astrid yelled. "Quick!"
Sam thought he was too far gone to respond, but he somehow started his feet moving again and went up to where Little Pete was standing and Astrid kneeling. There was a girl lying in the dirt. Her clothing was a mess, her black hair ratty. She was Asian, pretty without being beautiful, and little more than skin and bones. But the first thing they noticed was that her forearms ended in a solid concrete block. Astrid made a quick sign of the cross and pressed two fingers against the girl's neck.
"Lana!"
Astrid cried. Lana sized up the situation quickly.
"I don't see any injuries. I think maybe she's starving or else sick in some other way."
"What's she doing out here?" Adelio wondered. "Oh, man, what did someone do to her hands?"
"I can't heal hunger,"
Lana said.
"I tried it on myself when I was with the pack. Didn't work."
Adelio untwisted the cap from his water bottle, knelt, and carefully drizzled water across the girl's cheek so that a few drops curled into her mouth.
"Look, she's swallowing."
Adelio broke a tiny bite from one of the power bars and placed it gently into the girl's mouth. After a second, the girl's mouth began to move, to chew. "There's a road over there," Sam said. "I think so, anyway. A dirt road, I think."
"Someone drove by and dumped her here,"
Astrid agreed. Sam pointed at the dirt. "You can see how she dragged that block."
"Some sick stuff going on," Adelio muttered angrily. "Who would do something like this?"
Little Pete stood staring down at the girl. Astrid noticed.
"He doesn't usually stare at people that way."
"I guess he's never seen what some creeps can do," Adelio said.
"No,"
Astrid said thoughtfully.
"Petey doesn't relate to people, usually. They're not totally real to him. I cut my hand once, really badly, with a kitchen knife. I was bleeding all over, and he didn't even blink. And I'm the person he's closest to in the whole world."
Lana said,
"Sam, can you, you know, like, burn that concrete off her hands?"
"No, I can't aim that precisely. I don't even know what can be done,"
Adelio said, as he fed the girl another microscopic bite of food.
"You try and break that stuff off with a sledgehammer or something, or even a hammer and a chisel, it's going to really hurt. Probably break every bone in her hands, man."
"Who would have done this to her?"
Lana wondered.
"That's a Coates Academy uniform,"
Astrid answered.
"We're probably not far from there."
"Shh,"
Lana hissed.
"I hear something."
Everyone instinctively ducked down. In the silence, they could clearly hear a car engine. It was being driven erratically,
revving one minute, slowing the next.
"Come on, let's find out who it is," Sam said. "How are we going to move this girl?"
Adelio asked.
"I can maybe carry her, but I can't carry her and that block, man."
"I'll grab her, you grab the block," Sam said.
"This thing is really heavy,"
Adelio said.
"I better not even meet the pendejo who did this. Do this to a person? What kind of animal does something like that?"
The car turned out to be an SUV. It was driven, as far as Sam could tell, by a lone boy.
"I know him," Astrid said.
She waved. The SUV lurched to a halt. Astrid leaned against the open window.
"Computer Jack?"
Sam had seen the techie wizard around town, but had never really spoken to him.
"Hi,"
the boy said.
"Oh, good. You found Taylor. I was looking for her."
"You were looking for her?"
"Yeah. She's sick. You know, like, in the head. She wandered away from school, and so I was looking for her, and..."
Right at that moment, Sam knew it was a trap. A split second too late. Drake rose up from behind the third row of seats. He had a gun pointed at Astrid's head, but he was looking straight at Sam.
"Don't even think about it. However fast you think you are, all I have to do is squeeze the trigger."
"I'm not moving," Sam said. He raised his hands in surrender.
No, Sam boy. I know all about the power. Keep your hands by your side."
"I have to help carry this girl," Sam said.
"No one's carrying her anywhere. She's done for."
"We're not leaving her here," Astrid said.
"The guy holding the gun makes the decisions,"
Drake said, and grinned.
"And if I were you, Astrid, I wouldn't push me. Kane wants to try to take you and your little brother alive, but if you two try and do your disappearing act, I'll shoot Sam."
"You're a psychopath, Drake,"
Astrid said.
"Wow, such a big word. I guess that's why you're Astrid the Genius, huh? You know what else is a good word? Retard."
Astrid flinched like he had hit her.
"My brother is a retard,"
Drake mimicked.
"I wish I had recorded it. Okay, we're gonna climb in the truck here one by one. Nice and slow."
"Not without the girl," Sam said flatly.
"That's right,"
Adelio agreed. Drake sighed theatrically.
"Okay, pick her up. Throw her in the front seat next to Jack."
Doing that took some effort. The girl was alive, but not really conscious, and was too weak to move. Quinn had gone rigid with fear and indecision. Sam could see the conflict on his face. Should he stick with Sam, or try and ingratiate himself with Drake? Sam wondered what he would decide. For now, his friend was staring wide-eyed, blank, mouth trembling, eyes darting, looking for an answer.
"It'll be all right, Quinn,"
Sam whispered. Quinn didn't even hear him. Astrid climbed in. She sat directly behind Jack.
"I really thought there might be some hope for you, Jack."
"Nah," Drake said. "Jack's like a screwdriver or a pair of pliers. He's just a tool. He does what we tell him to do."
Little Pete and Lana shared the middle bench with Astrid. Adelio and Sam were in the back row. Drake pressed the gun to the back of Adelio's head. "Your problem's with me, Drake," Sam said.
"You might take a chance if it's only your own life on the line," Drake said. "But you won't risk me shooting your pet Mexican here, or your girlfriend."
They drove in jerks and starts, Jack frequently weaving off the road onto the shoulder. But they didn't crash, which was Sam's only hope. They pulled up outside Coates Academy. Sam had been once before, brought there to see where his mother worked. The gloomy old building looked like it had been shelled. One entire room upstairs was exposed. The main door had been blown apart.
"Looks like a war zone,"
Adelio commented.
"The phase is a war zone,"
Drake said darkly. The sight of the place brought Sam a wave of sad memories. His mother had done her best to portray her job as something she was excited about, and Coates as a place where she was going to love working. But even then, Sam had known that she was only here because he had broken up his mother's marriage. He felt within him the residue of his rage at his mother. It was childish. Shameful, really. Wrong. And it was the wrong time to be thinking about all that now, where he was, with what was happening, what was likely to happen. What was that phrase of Adelio's? Cabeza de turco? Scapegoat? He needed someone to blame, and his anger had been building at his mother since long before the phase. But as mad as I am, Sam thought, it must be worse for Kane. I was the son she kept. He was the one she gave away. When they pulled up, Panda and a couple of kids Sam didn't know were waiting. They were armed with baseball bats. "I want to see Kane," Sam said as they climbed out.
"No doubt," Drake said. "But first we have things to take care of. Line up. Walk single file around the building."
"Tell Kane his brother is here," Sam insisted.
"You're not dealing with Kane, Sammy. You're dealing with me," Drake said. "I'd just as soon shoot you. I'd just as soon shoot all of you. So don't piss me off."
They did as ordered. They turned the corner and came to the commons area behind the main building. There was a small performance stage made to look like a gazebo. More than 24 kids lined a low railing around the gazebo. They were all tied to it by a rope leash that gave them no more than a few feet of movement. Neck to rail, like tethered horses. Each of the kids was weighed down by a concrete block that encased their hands. Their eyes were hollow. Their cheeks caved in. Astrid used a word that Sam had never imagined coming from her.
"Nice language," Drake said with a smirk. "And in front of the petard, too."
A cafeteria tray had been placed in front of each of the prisoners. It must have been a very recent delivery, because some were still licking their trays, hunched over, faces down, tongues out, licking like dogs.
"It's a circle of freaks," Drake said proudly,
waving a hand like a showman. In a crusty old wheelbarrow to one side, three kids were using a short-handled shovel to mix cement. It made a heavy sloshing sound. They dumped a shovelful of gravel into the mix and stirred it like lumpy gravy.
"Oh, no,"
Lana said, backing away, but one of the Coates kids smashed her behind the knee with his baseball bat, and she crumpled.
"Gotta do something with unhelpful freaks," Drake said. "Can't have you people running around loose."
He must have seen Sam start to react, because he stuck his gun against Astrid's head.
"Your call, Sam. You so much as flinch, and we'll get to see what a genius brain really looks like."
"Hey, I got no powers, man," Quinn said.
"This is sick, Drake. Like you're sick," Astrid said. "I can't even reason with you because you're just too damaged, too hopelessly messed up."
"Shut up," Drake snapped. "Okay, Sam. You first. It's easy to do. You just stick your hands in and then, presto, no more powers."
Quinn pleaded. Sam's a freak. I'm not, man. I have no powers. I am just a normal person. Sam walked with shaky steps to the wheelbarrow. The kids mixing the concrete looked very unhappy about what they were doing, but Sam didn't kid himself. They would do what they were told. There was a hole dug in the dirt, about a foot long, half as wide, and maybe 8 inches deep. The cement mixers sloshed a shovelful of concrete into the hole, filling it a third of the way.
"Stick your hands in, Sam," Drake ordered. "Do it, or pop goes the genius."
Sam plunged his hands into the cement. The kid with the shovel dumped a load of wet, heavy cement into the hole and used a trowel to poke it down. Then, half a shovelful, and the boy used the trowel to smooth it over and return the excess to the wheelbarrow. Sam knelt there, hands encased, his brain crazed with desperate plans and wild calculations. If he moved, Astrid would die. If he did nothing, they would be slaves.
"Okay, Astrid, your turn," Drake said.
Another hole, and the same process. Astrid was crying, saying,
"It'll be okay, Petey. It'll be okay,"
through her tears. One of the mixers got busy digging a third hole. He did it with quick, practiced moves, slicing the turf with a trowel.
"Takes about 10 minutes is all, Sam," Drake said. "If you're gonna do something brave, you've got about 8 minutes. Tick-tock."
"This is how you have to deal with freaks," Quinn said. "No choice, Drake."
Sam could feel the concrete hardening. Already, if he tried to move his fingers, he found they were imprisoned. Astrid was more upset than Sam had ever seen her. She was crying openly. Her fear fed his. He couldn't bear it. For himself, it was bad enough, but seeing her this way... And yet, Astrid wasn't returning his gaze. She was focused entirely on little Pete. Almost as if she was crying for his benefit, communicating her terror to him. Of course she was. But it wasn't working. Little Pete was in his game, in another world.
"I think time's about up for you, Sam," Drake said with a laugh. "Try pulling your hands out. Can't do it, can you?"
Drake stepped up behind him and swatted him on the back of his head.
"Come on, Sam. Even Kane's scared of you, so you must be tough. Come on. Show me what you got."
He hit Sam again, this time with the barrel of the gun. Sam collapsed, face down in the dirt. Sam raised himself up. He tugged as hard as he could, but his hands were imprisoned. His flesh itched. He fought against a tide of panic. He wanted to scream curses, but that would only entertain Drake.
"Yeah, take it like a man," Drake crowed. "After all, you're 14, right? So how long till you vacate? It's all just a passing phase here in the phase, right?"
The mixers dug the concrete block out of the dirt, and now, as he tried to stand, Sam felt the terrible weight of the thing. He could stand, but not without struggling. Drake got up close to him.
"So who's the man here? Who brought you and the rest of these freaks down?" "Me. And me without any powers at all."
Sam heard a door slam. He craned his head and saw Kane and Diana coming across the lawn. Kane walked at a languid pace across the lawn, smiling more broadly the closer he got.
"Well, if it isn't the defiant Sam Temple," he said. "Let me shake your hand." "Oh, sorry. My bad."
He laughed, a sound that seemed more a release of tension than anything else.
"I got him," Drake announced. "I got them all."
"Yes, you did," Kane said. "Good work, Drake. Very good work. And I see Sam's little friends are likewise caught." "Why don't you give Drake a little scratch behind the ears, Kane? He's been such a good dog,"
Diana said. The mixers had dug Astrid's hands out of the dirt. She was crying hysterically, unable to stand all the way up. Little Pete went to her, walking like he was in a dream, head down over his Game Boy. Astrid bumped her concrete block into Little Pete. And suddenly, Sam knew what she was doing. He had to provide distraction. He had to keep the focus away from Astrid and Little Pete.
"You don't want to mess with this girl. Her name is Lana," Sam said, jerking his chin toward her. "She's a healer."
Kane's eyebrows shot up.
"A what? A healer?"
"She can heal anything, any kind of injury," Sam said.
Astrid, barely able to move, was slowly, rhythmically swinging her block back and forth in a narrow arc, bumping it against Little Pete's Game Boy.
"She healed me," Sam said. "Coyote bit me. Want to see?"
Kane said, "I have a better idea. Drake, give the girl something to heal."
Drake laughed out loud, a gleeful sound. He pressed the muzzle of his pistol against Sam's knee.
"No!"
Diana yelled. The explosion was shocking. The pain at first didn't register, but Sam collapsed. He fell on his side like a felled tree. The leg, blown half off, buckled and twisted beneath him. And then came the pain. Drake smiled hugely and yelled an exultant, "Yeah!" Astrid, startled, slammed the concrete block so hard against Little Pete that she knocked the Game Boy from his hands and knocked him back a step. Diana frowned, alarmed. For the first time, she really registered Little Pete's presence. Through a red mist of pain, Sam saw her eyes fly open, her fingers stab toward Little Pete.
"Drake, you idiot! The kid! The kid!"
Astrid dropped to her knees, slammed the concrete block down on the Game Boy. There was no flash of light, no sound. But suddenly, the concrete encasing Astrid's hands was gone. Simply gone. So was the concrete block on Sam's hands, and every one of the other children. Astrid was on her hands and knees, knuckles pressed into the soft dirt. The concrete blocks were gone like they had never existed, though the hands of those who had been trapped longest were masses of pale, dead, sloughing skin. Kane was quick. He backed away, turned and ran for the building. Diana seemed torn, uncertain. Then she bolted after Kane. Little Pete picked up his game. The block had disappeared a split second before smashing down on the game. It was dirty and had a piece of grass sticking out of it now, but it still worked. Drake stood rooted. The gun was still in his hand, smoking from the bullet he had fired into Sam's knee. He blinked. He raised the gun and fired at Little Pete. But his aim was wild. His aim was off because of the blinding flash of greenish-white light. Drake's arm, the entire arm holding the gun, burst into flame. Drake screamed. The gun fell from his melting fingers. The flesh burned black. The smoke was brown. Drake screamed and stared in stark horror as the fire ate away at his arm. He broke and ran, the wind fanning the flames.
"Good shot, Sam," Adelio said.
"I was aiming at his head,"
Sam said, gritting his teeth through the pain. Lana knelt beside Sam and laid her hands on the bloody mess of his knee.
"We have to get out of here,"
Sam managed to say.
"Forget me, we have to run. Back to Cainwell."
But that was the last of his strength. It felt as if a black hole was swallowing him up. He swirled down and down into unconsciousness. 35. 86 hours, 11 minutes.
"Where are we?"
Sam woke up all at once and was embarrassed to find that he was being half-dragged down the road by Adelio and a kid he didn't know. Adelio stopped. "Can you stand?" Sam tested his legs. Lana's healing of his leg had been complete.
"Yeah, I'm fine. Feel okay, actually."
He looked back and realized they had been leading a sort of ragtag parade. Astrid and little Pete, Lana holding a boy's hand, while her dog bounded into the woods to chase a squirrel. Quinn walked by himself along the shoulder of the road, shunned and ashamed. And there were almost 2 dozen kids, the liberated freaks from Coates. Adelio saw the look on his face.
"You got yourself a crowd of followers, Sam."
"Kane hasn't come after us?"
"Not yet."
The group of them was straggling down the road, bunched here and there, spread out elsewhere, wandering, undisciplined. Sam winced when he saw the hands of the Coates kids. The concrete had leached all the moisture from their skin. Their skin was white and loose, hanging in tatters in some cases, like the tattered bandages of some horror movie mummy. Their wrists revealed red circles where the concrete had rubbed the flesh bloody. They were filthy.
"Yeah," Adelio said, knowing what he was seeing. "Lana's going through them one at a time, healing them. She's amazing."
Sam thought he heard something extra in Adelio's voice. "She's cute, too, huh, Adelio?" Adelio's eyes went wide, and he started blushing.
"She's just, you know..."
Sam slapped his shoulder. "Good luck with that."
"You think she... I mean, you know me, I'm just..."
Adelio stammered his way to a stop.
"Dude, let's see if we can stay alive. Then you can ask her out or whatever."
Sam surveyed the scene. They were on the Coates Road, passing the Iron Gate, still many miles from Perdido Beach. Astrid noticed that he was awake and hurried her pace.
"About time you woke up," she said.
"Well," he played along with her bantering tone, "usually after I get shot and then fire lasers out of my hands, I like to enjoy a brief nap." He caught Lana's eye and mouthed the word,
"Thanks."
Lana shrugged, as if to say,
"No biggie." "Kane won't let this stand,"
Astrid said, turning serious.
"No, he'll come after us," Sam said. "But not just yet. Not until he's come up with a plan. He's lost Drake, and he's got to be worried that we have all these kids with powers who hate his guts."
"What makes you think he won't just come after us?"
"Think about when he first came rolling into Perdido Beach," Sam said. "He had a plan. He trained his people and rehearsed."
"So we go back to Perdido Beach?"
Astrid asked.
"Orc is still there, and a few others. There may be trouble with them."
"We need to get some food for these kids," Adelio said. "That's first."
3 or 4 miles to Ralph's, Sam mused. "Can they make it?"
I guess they have to, Adelio said. But they're scared, too. I mean, you got some messed up kids here. What they've been through and all? We're all scared. There's not much we can do about that, Sam said. But he didn't like the sound of that. It was glib. It was meaningless. Sure, they were all scared, but there was something they could do about it. In fact, they had to do something about it. Sam stopped in the middle of the road and waited for the others to catch up. Listen, he said. He raised his hands to get their attention, calm them down, but they had seen what happened when Sam raised his hands. They flinched and seemed about ready to dart off the road and into the woods. Sam dropped his hands hastily. Sorry. Let me start over. Could I have everyone's attention? Sam said, using a gentler voice. He kept his hands by his sides. He waited patiently until he was sure everyone was listening. Quinn still hung back. Some bad stuff has happened to all of us, Sam said. Some very bad stuff. We're beat up. We're tired. We don't know what's going on. The whole world has gone bizarre on us. Our own bodies and minds have changed in ways that are even weirder than puberty. That earned a few smiles and one grudging laugh. Yeah, I know we're all shook up. We're all scared. I know I am, he admitted with a rueful smile. So let's not try and play like it isn't scary. It is. But sometimes the worst thing is the fear, you know? His gaze traveling over the faces, he realized anew that they had another concern, greater even than fear. Although hunger's no joke either. We're a few miles from a grocery store. We'll get you all fed there. I know some of you have been in hell since this happened. Well, I would like to tell you it's over, but it's not. Grim looks on every face. Sam had said all he had really planned to say, but they still needed something more. He shot a glance at Astrid. She was as solemn as anyone, but she gave him a nod, encouraging him to say more. Okay. Okay, he said so softly that some had to move closer to hear him. Here's the thing. We're not going to give in. We're going to fight.
Got that right, a voice cried out.
First thing we need to have clear. There's no line between freak and normal here. If you have the power, we'll need you. If you don't, we'll need you. Heads were nodding. Looks were being exchanged. Coates kids, Perdido Beach kids, we're together now. We're together. Maybe you did things to survive. Maybe you weren't always brave. Maybe you gave up hope. A girl sobbed suddenly. Well, that's all over now, Sam said gently. It all starts fresh. Right here, right now. We're brothers and sisters now. Doesn't matter we don't know each other's names. We are brothers and sisters. And we're going to survive. And we're going to win. And we're going to find our way to some kind of happiness again. There was a long, deep silence. So, Sam said, my name is Sam. I'm in this with you. All the way. He turned to Astrid.
I'm Astrid. I'm in this with you too.
My name is Adelio. What they said. Brothers and sisters. Hermanos.
Tuan Vaughn, said a thin boy with yet unhealed hands like dead fish. I'm in.
Decca, said a strong, solidly built girl with cornrows and a nose ring.
I'm in, and I have game.
Me too,
called a skinny girl with reddish pigtails.
My name's Brianna. I can go real fast.
One by one, they declared their determination. The voices started out soft and gained strength, each voice louder, firmer, more determined than the one before. Only Quinn remained silent. He hung his head, and tears rolled down his cheeks. "Quinn," Sam called to him. Quinn didn't respond, just looked down at the ground. "Quinn," Sam said again. "It starts fresh right now. Nothing before counts. Nothing. Brothers, man?" Quinn struggled with the lump in his throat. But then, in a low voice, he said,
"Yeah. Brothers."
"Okay. Now let's get everyone some food," Sam said. When they started out again, they no longer spread in every direction. They didn't march like an army, but they came as close as a bunch of traumatized kids could. They walked with their heads a little higher. Someone actually laughed. It was a good sound. In a low voice, Astrid said,
"Nothing to fear but fear itself."
I don't think I said it quite that well. Adelio slapped him on the back.
"You said it well enough, man."
"Sam's back."
"What?"
"Sam, he's back. He's coming down the highway." Howard's chest tightened. He was halfway down the steps of Town Hall, on his way to McDonald's for one of Albert's waffle burgers. It was Elwood, Dara Beidou's boyfriend, who had delivered the news. He sounded relieved, there was no denying it. He sounded glad. Howard made a mental note that Elwood was disloyal, but he realized at the same time that he might have bigger issues to worry about than Elwood's loyalty.
"If Sam's coming back, it's on the end of a leash held by Drake Merwin," Howard blustered.
But Elwood was off to tell Dara and was no longer listening. Howard looked around, feeling a little lost, not quite sure what to do. He spotted Mary Terrafino pushing a shopping cart loaded with juice boxes, A&D ointment, and some bruised apples across the plaza toward the daycare. Howard trotted down the steps and caught up with her.
"What's up, Mary?"
he asked.
"Your time?"
Mary said, and laughed at her own wit.
"Yeah, you think? My time's up?"
"Sam's on his way."
"You saw him?"
"I had 3 different people tell me he's coming down the highway." "You better rush out and stop him, Howard,"
Mary crowed.
"He's one guy. We'll kick his butt."
"Good luck with that,"
Mary said. Howard wished Ork was here. With Ork at his side, he didn't have to put up with any of Mary's lip. But one-on-one was a different story.
"You want me telling Kane you're on Sam's side?"
Howard demanded.
"I didn't say I was on anyone's side. I'm on the side of the Prees I take care of. But here's what I notice, Howard. I notice you hear Sam's name and all of a sudden you're ready to wet yourself. So you know what? Maybe it's you who is disloyal. After all, if Kane is so great, why would you be scared of Sam? Right?"
She leaned against her basket and got it rolling again. Howard swallowed hard and argued with his own fear.
"It's no big thing," he told himself. "We have Kane and Drake and Ork. We're cool. We're cool."
He believed that for a good 20 seconds before he broke and ran for Ork. Ork was in the house he had taken over and now shared with Howard, just across the street from where Drake lived. It was on a short street, the closest place to Town Hall that you could live. Kids called it Bully Row.
Ork was asleep on the couch with a DVD of a kung fu movie playing at blasting volume on the TV. Ork had taken to staying up through the night and sleeping days. It was a lousy house, in Howard's opinion, badly decorated and smelling of garlic, but Ork hadn't cared. He wanted to stay close to the action in town, and he wanted to stay close enough to keep an eye on Drake across the street. Howard searched for the remote and shut off the TV. There were empty beer cans on the glass-topped coffee table and cigarettes in an ashtray. Ork was now drinking a couple beers a day. Since Bet. That's when the drinking had started in earnest. Howard was worried about Ork. Not that he exactly liked him, but Howard's fate was bound up with Ork's, and he didn't like the picture of what his world would be like if Ork dumped him.
Ork, get up, man.
No response.
Ork, get up. We have trouble.
Howard poked him in his shoulder. Ork opened one slit eye.
Why are you bothering me?
Sam Temple is coming back.
It took Ork a while to process that. Then he sat up quite suddenly and grabbed his forehead.
Oh, man. Headache.
It's called a hangover,
Howard snapped. Then, when Ork shot him a murderous look, he softened and said,
I have some Tylenol in the kitchen.
He filled a glass of water and tapped two pills into his palm and brought them back for Ork.
What's the big deal?
Ork asked. He'd never been exactly quick, but now Ork's thick-headedness was really irritating Howard.
The big deal? Sam is coming back. That's the big deal.
So?
Come on, Ork. Think about it. You figure Sam is cruising into town and he doesn't have some kind of plan? Kane isn't here, man. He's up the hill. Drake, too. Which means it's you and me in charge.
Ork reached for one of the beer cans, rattled it, sighed contentedly when he heard an inch of beer sloshing. He poured it down his throat.
So we have to go kick Sam's butt?
Ork asked. Howard hadn't thought that far ahead. If Sam was back, that wasn't good. Sam was back and Kane wasn't? It was hard to figure that out.
We go spy him out, man. We see what he's up to.
Ork squinted.
If I see him, I'll kick his butt.
We have to at least figure out what he's after, Howard cautioned. We should get whoever is around at town hall. Mallet, maybe. Chaz. Whoever we can find.
Ork stood up, belched, and said,
I gotta pee. Then we'll get the Hummer. Go kick some butt.
Howard shook his head.
Ork, listen to me. I know you don't want to hear this, but backing Kane may not be the winning move.
Ork stared his blank, stupid stare.
Ork, man, what if Sam wins this? I mean, what if Sam gets over on Kane? Where does that leave us?
Ork didn't answer for so long, Howard was sure he hadn't heard him. Then, Ork heaved up a sigh that was almost a sob. He grabbed Howard's arm, something he never did.
Howard, I killed Bet.
Howard said,
You didn't mean to, Ork.
You're the smart one,
Ork said sadly.
But sometimes you're dumber than me. You know that?
Okay.
I killed someone, didn't do me any harm. Astrid ain't ever gonna even look at me again unless she's hating me.
No, 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 Howard argued. Sam is gonna need help. He's gonna need someone tough. If we go to him now, eat crow, you know, say, Yeah, you're the man, Sammy.
You kill somebody, you burn in hell,
Orc said.